What's going on, everybody, and welcome to the Nerdable Podcast number 24. Ooh, my name's Dylan, Mr. Tizai, and I will be your host today. And with me, I am joined by a slew of friendos. So, first up on the chopping block, we got... Hello, friend.
Hi there.
This is Dale Bihari.
Say hi to the people. It is Dale Bihari. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, this is the man. This is the guy. This is the guy right here.
The best guy.
How's your day been so far?
It's not great, actually. Horrifically hungover. This is gonna perk me up. I can feel it.
All right, you got this. I have faith, dog. All right. Next up, we got.
That's me.
The man, the myth, the legend.
I'm blue, dubba dee dubba die, dubba dee dubba die, dubba dee dubba die.
I know I always have to look forward to your intros. Because they're always something else. Like,
well, I mean, I was sat there and I was like, Dale, you're going in first. What are we doing as our entrance joke? And he totally shit the bed. So.
Good job. Yeah, he's hungover. So.
Okay. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, he just told me. He said he was having a bad day. He's hungover. And last, but definitely not least, our guest this week.
How's it going, guys? I heard that they were going to be singing. I am not going to sing for you, so there's that.
Yeah, Dale was way too hungover, apparently, to be able to hit me with the song. But how's it going, Kyle? Kyle Applequist is the product manager for Endgame TV, who produced a lot of like Nintendo esports events, which is pretty topical given into his performance at E3. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. So.
Yes. Absolutely, guys. Super stoked to be here. This is going to be a lot of fun. I think we got a lot of cool stuff to talk about this week after everything we've seen from Nintendo. I mean, just from my perspective and what I have experience in, but I think you guys have seen some really cool stuff on the other side of things.
Yeah. So first off, what were you going to say, Spud?
I'm just saying I'm admiring Apple's enthusiasm and energy here because he assumes we're a lot more professional than we actually are. And this is just going to turn into a shit storm.
We don't do as bad as you think.
Don't worry. We're going to have a good time. I'm ready here.
Dale's about to pour himself another glass.
No, he's not. Can we not make jokes, please?
All right. My bad, dog. He's like, please don't give me war flashbacks. Dale's sitting here like thinking back to the trenches. Oh, no.
I mean, it's 9 p.m. out here where I'm at, and I just cracked a Heineken, so we're ready to go.
Guys, I'm going to have to take a break. Sorry.
You triggered him, little boy. So first of all, you know, a quick wrap-up over events this past week. I don't think it's possible because we got hit by E3, which had a lot of cool stuff going on. So I guess we'll just think of some highlights. And Aaron had in the group chat a little poll where he was asking us the best and worst for each of us to write into a post. So I guess we could kind of do something similar here, but just like the people here. So best and worst like thing anybody noticed from E3. I know I sort of like just sprung that on people out of nowhere, but like, Spud, what were yours? Because I know you had some.
It's a toss up between Anthem and Metroid Prime 4 for the best. Anthem looks like it's got a hell of a lot of potential. I'm really interested to see how that develops. I'm going to be keeping a close eye on that. Obviously, Metroid Prime 4, that's pretty huge. We were talking about that maybe, 2-3 weeks ago? We were talking about that, being like, oh, there's never going to be another Metroid Prime game. There needs to be, but there won't. And then they came out and was like, oh, yeah, by the way, guys, Metroid Prime 4 is now in production. I think everyone collectively shit themselves when they saw that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I like how they knew that that was the only game that they could announce by literally just showing some letters on the screen, because they didn't need to show anything else. Just that thought alone that Metroid Prime 4 exists was enough to hype people.
Yeah, I mean, they're a pretty iconic sort of first-person shooter kind of game. There's, you know, they could show footage of it, sure, but they didn't need to. They knew that we've been waiting for this for however long. And
it's been 10
to
years.
To see that they're now, after 10 years in development, being like, well, 10 years and being like, you know what, we should probably make one that doesn't blow chunks. We're sorry for Freedom Force or whatever it was.
And Other M.
Other M, yeah. We're sorry about that. We're going to go back to making Prime games because they were great. And I'm all for that. I'm very excited to see what we got. And for my worst, I'm gonna have to rag on Bethesda.
Yeah, I don't blame you there.
What specifically
about Bethesda?
The fact that they opened up and went, "Hey guys, we're still making Skyrim for Switch," and we're like, "Yeah, we know. Have you got a release date yet? No? Okay, so you got us up for no reason. Thanks, guys."
But you can get the Master Sword in Skyrim for Switch.
Oh, yay.
Amiibos, guys.
Dude,
I saw that tweet that was like, "I fear not the man who has reached 10,000 games one time, but one game 10,000 times."
Todd Howard, dude, he will sell a Skyrim exactly as many times as possible. He will reach the limit. Like,
I'd like to think he knows what he's doing. He's clearly seen that he's got a good thing going there, and he wants to play that to the hilt. But for God's sake, we passed the hilt a long time ago.
Like,
it didn't need a remaster.
I played Skyrim a lot. 10 years, I mean, like 6 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I played it a shit ton when it came out, and I haven't touched it since. I haven't needed to.
I got sucked into it a little bit again once when Skyrim, was it Remaster or Ultimate Edition or whatever they're calling these remakes these days? But when that came out, the Remastered Edition, I did get sucked into the Skyrim fever again. But yeah, it's been a bit too much.
Especially the fact that, like, Skyrim VR on PSVR, you have to buy separately. Like, that's what got me about Bethesda's announcements. Fallout VR and PC 2 is a separate $60 game from Fallout 4, you know?
Wait, what?
Yeah, no, it's a separate game. You it's not like you just buy Fallout 4 and then you just plug in your VR. Now it's Fallout VR. No, it's a separate game you have to buy.
What
the shit?
Yeah.
God damn it, Bethesda.
Yeah, god damn it, indeed.
All right, well, I think we should probably move on from my gripes.
Dale or Apple, you guys got a best and worst E3?
I'll let Dale take it first.
Cool, thanks. I think for me, best, Mario and Rabbids. I'm quite excited about that. I kind of was expecting to hate it, and I don't, so that's amazing. And a pleasant surprise, I think, so I'm excited. Keep an eye on that. Worst, I'm still not totally convinced by Sea of Thieves. I know there's a bit of hype building around it now, but I just am not feeling it. It was probably the thing that underwhelmed me the most, if you like.
Dale. Pirates.
What? Yeah, dude, you got me there. Where I'm stuck with Sea of Thieves is it's like I can only imagine it being a good time if I was playing with a full squad of homies.
Yeah,
but, like,
exactly,
have fun
exactly.
trying to sell that game to four friends just so you can play.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm not going to buy one copy of that game unless I know, like, three other buddies are going to buy that copy. And my friends aren't going to buy that copy unless they know that three other friends are going to buy that copy. Like, it's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the other problem is that it's... We've heard a lot about it for a long time now, and we're only just starting to see what the game actually plays like. And while it looked fine, it wasn't amazing... And then we also had Ubisoft announce Skull and Bones, which looks really good. And I think that is the kind of game that you could jump into and wouldn't need to round together a whole host of pals to do that. So I don't know. I think it's going to struggle personally, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's got the Rare name on it, and that might help. But people know Rare's not Rare because Playtonic happened, so, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. All right, Apple, you got a good and a bad.
Yeah, so I'll start with the bad. I'm going to have to echo what Spud said about Bethesda. Again, just I wasn't exactly expecting Elder Scrolls 6 because I know it takes, 20 years to make an Elder Scrolls game that will launch with hella bugs as it is. But, I mean, I understand the development process for that. But at the same time, like, I just can't keep getting Skyrim over and over. At every single E3, it's just like, hey, here's more Skyrim. It's been 10 years at this point, guys. Come on. So those are my thoughts on kind of what I didn't like. What I did like, though, was Nintendo Versus. I think that's huge, and I don't think, or at least maybe I'm not seeing people talk about it as much on news sites, but Nintendo Versus, that is absolutely huge, especially coming from a company that has traditionally given esports the cold shoulder, the fact that they are kind of coming into esports with their own take on it and their own little Nintendo perspective that they're known to do, I think that's such a big deal, and I really can't wait to see where they go with it.
Yeah, so basically, like, for context, Nintendo's always, like, everything that's been a Nintendo game that's been ever, like, taken competitively has always been super grassroots. And Nintendo Versus is sort of their way of saying stuff like the Smash Bros. 4 Invitational that they did a couple years back was not just an isolated incident, that they're going to do more stuff like that, which they did three of them this year with the Pokken Invitational, the ARMS Invitational, and the Splatoon 2 Invitational, which is a lot going on. But they are marketing it and designing it very carefully with the stuff that they're actually doing in-house, so that they are invitationals. They're not competitions for people to just, you know, sign up and take. It's a show. It's a broadcast. They're taking it like like a show. They're very careful about that and letting the actual sort of competitiveness of it be like driven forward by the consumers and by the scene, because again the scene already exists. Like, they don't have to like build a Smash competitive scene because it's already gotten to the point where it is on its own.
Yeah, and I really like what you said about it, the fact that it is a show. The spin that Nintendo puts on it is really from a spectator perspective. You look at everything they do, especially with like the Splatoon Invitational they did at E3, they're very much putting an emphasis on making it a show, making it a production, making it something that people want to watch and will get people interested in purchasing the game, obviously, because that's what Nintendo wants. Nintendo wants to create this flash and this hype around the game. So it's very interesting seeing an esport being pushed from the top down rather than the bottom up, if that makes sense. Where you've seen a lot of these Nintendo games grow from the bottom up, grow from, you know, six people playing in a garage going all the way to things like Evo with the massive stage. Now you're seeing Nintendo kind of going with a top-down strategy, at least from my perspective, what it looks like to me they're doing, because they want to sell units of these games. It's taking it from the top, making these massive productions, and using that to push games out to the crowd, which I think both communities working together can have a really nice synergy. So I'm excited to see where Nintendo decides to move with this and what kind of collaborations we'll see with existing organizations in the future.
Yeah. Like, Spud, you've been playing a whole bunch of ARMS, right?
I have indeed.
Yeah. How are you feeling about that so far? I know you're writing your review as well, which is going to talk a lot about your thoughts. But did you manage to catch, like, the Invitational where all those, like, invited out players were swinging hands?
I sadly I did not, and I kind of wish I had,
actually.
I, as you said, I've been playing a lot of ARMS. I blitzed through like the one player Grand Prix mode, which is basically just I think it's more of a way to get a feel for how the different characters operate, because obviously you've got 10 different characters who all operate in 10 different ways. Like, you've got some people who are a little bit more sluggish than others. You've got people that can dash further, dash longer, dash twice, that kind of thing. And I used that to kind of get a feel for what kind of character I'd like to play. And then I moved on to the online, and that's where the game really shines through. And I kind of wish I'd seen the Invitational to see how those guys are performing, considering ARMS has only just come out. These guys haven't had much time to get their hands on it. And I really wish I'd seen how it would perform, because the online is... I'm not a particularly competitive person when it comes to playing online, but I'm actually getting kind of angry when I'm playing ARMS, and like the competitive streak is coming out of me quite a lot. Like, I'll be fighting someone, and if I'm throwing out punches and they're just dodging everything and then countering me with like some complete bullshit that I should have like avoided or whatever, I'm yelling at my Switch and being like, come on, man, that was crap, sort of thing.
I'm imagining you swinging your Joy-Cons around valiantly and shouting at the ceiling, too, so.
Yeah, no, I'm loving this mental image of, like, somebody, because it's not something I've really thought of before, somebody getting, like, salty, playing ARMS and just sitting there, and they're punching harder and harder, like, just, like, getting closer to the TV.
haven't played online with motion controls, because I'm still getting used to them, but I dread to think what's going to happen. I may do that one thing. You know when the Nintendo Wii came out and you saw all those like stories about people throwing remotes through TVs and screens?
Oh, yeah, like the Wii Sports Boxing.
Sorry, Ice Cream Man.
Oh, what? Get some. What the hell? Bring me.
Dude, there's ice cream in my freezer. I'm not going to go outside and spend money. But yeah, no, I could totally see me sort of flailing around and throwing a Joy-Con like through a wall or some shit, just because.
I do that all the time. So I don't have arms, but I have 1-2 Switch, which I play a lot with my friends who aren't gamers when they come around mine for parties and whatever. Those controllers go so far across the room in the heat of battle, it is unbelievable. Like, I can't imagine what arms must be like.
Oh, dude, you have no idea. I dread to think what it's going to be like when I start playing with motion controls online, because like I said, the online is where I get really competitive, and then things just start to go awry. Like, if I'm on a losing streak, I get really upset with myself, and then, yeah, I start getting a little bit more intense, and I start focusing up and being like, oh, come on!
I mean, you're used to what it's like being on the losing side of things from when we played Mario Kart, though, right?
Oof.
Yo, when's there going to be that Mario Kart Invitational?
Hey, man. Let's not, shall we?
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Speaking of Mario Kart with the Switch, it actually, and this kind of ties into ARMS, because I always wondered about the competitive viableness of motion controls, which obviously wasn't an option with the Wii. But now that the Switch has these HD motion controls, as they're calling them, and I wasn't a believer for the longest time, I was like, there's absolutely no way you can run a competitive game with motion controls. But after, because I actually just played a Switch for the first time, believe it or not, 2 weeks ago. And after feeling the motion controls of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on the Switch, I'm wondering if motion controls might actually be the future.
It's weird too, because when I was seeing ARMS, I was like, oh, whatever, I don't care about this game. And then they said, oh, but there's motion, but there's standard controls too. And I'm like, all right, now you got me kind of interested. And now it's like the reverse is happening.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I was like, yeah, no, I'm just gonna play it only with the Pro Controller. Like, you'd have to. I was thinking you would have to play it with the Pro Controller, but after feeling the responsiveness and kind of detail that these Joy-Cons have, like, I'm wondering if you're trying to be like a high level ARMS player. Well, I'm wondering if you need the motion controls for the amount of, I guess, dexterity and preciseness and precision.
You kind of have more options, right? You can angle your punches a bit better. And from what I've seen, the standard control layout is kind of junk, right? I actually haven't bought the game yet. I'm going to buy it like pretty soon, but I haven't played it. I've only actually played like one game of ARMS, and that was at Genesis 4. I didn't get to play any of the test punches online because I was always busy. I was always traveling or doing something. It sucked.
Yeah. My experience with the motion controls is incredibly brief so far, and so I can't really comment. Personally, I will agree the layout of the standard controls is a bit weird, but I feel it gives you better control. But I think that's probably just because I'm used to it, and that's how I started playing it. Using the motion controls to keep your character moving and stuff seems a little bit weird, because I don't know, I just haven't gotten used to it. Although you can throw your punches a little bit more precise. But like I said, I'm still getting used to that. And so I'm throwing punches out wide or not throwing them like close enough to the target, whatever.
I just wish you could walk around with the control stick while using motion for punching. But that's
if you could do that, it would be perfect.
But
honestly,
the fact that you have to move around with the things that you're punching with doesn't work.
Yeah, because then you have to sort of transition between, like, you've got to transition your thoughts from, okay, so now I'm moving my dude, now I'm punching, back to moving again. And I don't know, the way the controls are laid out like that as well, because you're going to have like the thumbs up style of holding them. And so like your thumbs are meant to rest on the shoulder buttons, but you've got dash, jump, rush, and something else on the other shoulder buttons. So you've got all four shoulder buttons, and you need to kind of flip your thumb between the two while you're focusing on moving by moving your hands. And I don't know. I think it's just because I haven't gotten used to it, but it feels kind of awkward in my mind. but I could totally see how the motion control side of it would impact like competitive play, and that's why I'm kind of annoyed I missed the Invitational to see how they were performing.
I mean, it's all on YouTube if you're interested, like after we're done here. But another interesting thing, while talking about like the future as being, is it motion controls? I'm getting flashbacks to like the PC gaming show at E3 when that dude was talking about the future of esports with the VR, and there was this VR game that's like a 3D soccer where you're flying around in this maze and grabbing the ball and like bouncing it around, kind of like Rocket League, except you're a limbless body floating in like a space station. And he was really pitching that, like, there's a $1 million prize pool in this VR game, and you see these four dudes just flailing around in VR behind them, and it looked hysterical, but it's like, I wonder what that would be like playing a sport where, you know, you're in VR and you're just floating around, like, that sort of blurs the lines between esports and sport, because, like, that's actually, like, a physical sport now, and that's weird.
Yeah, absolutely, but I think when I hear you describe, because I actually didn't see the show that you're talking about, but when I hear you describe it, I kind of think, you know, that's an amazing thing to romanticize, right? Like, kind of knocking down that boundaries between sports and esports that has always kind of been there. But I think the main kind of counterpoint I see to that is the existence of MOBAs. Because you look at it and you look at the trajectory of the industry, and MOBAs aren't going away. You're still going to see these huge prize pools for Dota, these huge prize pools for League of Legends. And not to say there's not room for other esports to kind of come in and grab a small piece of that pie. It's just that at the end of the day, MOBAs for the considerable future will still be eating up the large portion of those prize pools that we see in esports. So I think if we're talking about VR in the future of esports, then MOBAs have to be a part of that discussion, because for all intents and purposes right now, MOBAs absolutely dominate esports, and I'm trying to think of how VR could affect that end of things, you know?
Yeah, MOBAs like League are kind of like the soccer or football of esports. Like, the entire world likes it. It's weird. I think it'd be super neat if, like, a game like League, you could spectate mode in VR and then, like, float around, like, in the battlefield and, like, actually, like, see stuff going along that way. But aside from that, can't really integrate.
That's actually a really awesome idea, because if you think about it, right, then you have your cameraman, your observer in a game like League or Dota of Heroes of the Storm. Now, instead of having to have a designated spectator clicking around, you have your guy who's working for Riot or Blizzard or what have you with a VR headset actually scoping around, almost as if, you know, it's, you know, like in the NFL, I don't know like if any of you guys watch the NFL, but like in the NFL where they've got those cameras that kind of go above the play and kind of swoop around really fluidly and can zoom in and out, like, not that they don't already do that already with the super talented observers that are already in League of Legends, but imagine if that observer had a VR headset on and could move freely kind of in that sort of space. Now, that would be dope.
Yeah, it'd feel more connected and visceral, I suppose. It's interesting.
I mean, it'd probably get me more involved in watching esports. I was going to say, especially MOBAs, because they bore me to tears.
What I always think could be interesting is I keep seeing conversations about the nature of live broadcasting and how like it needs like a fundamental rehaul. Like I saw like Gutex was tweeting a bunch yesterday about how like Twitch Music kind of sort of fell on its face because people are literally just like aiming a camera and looking at the show like that. Rather than, like, how cool would it be if, like, you had access to every camera of the show and you could click and watch and view different parts and, like, hop in the crowd at 1 second and then hop on the stage in another just by clicking around the stage and be a part of it, you know? Like, that's something you can only do virtually. Meanwhile, on Twitch, instead, all it's doing is just the same thing TV does. And it'd be interesting if there was more ways to, like, directly engage with it. And I feel like, as it stands, like, people are getting with the idea of directly engaging with a broadcast, but in sort of the wrong ways. Like, if you look at what Microsoft's doing with Mixer, you know how during the Microsoft showing, they were showing that one, you know, the culling ripoff, right? Where the dude, like, gave one of the players a bonus by interacting on the stream. That's something they were highlighting. Yeah. And they had that shoutcaster dude.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like, that's a neat idea, but I don't think that should ever be something happening at the high level, but they're on the right track of what are more ways that, like, me at home can be more involved.
Yeah. Like, obviously, you couldn't... I was just going to say, obviously, you couldn't have that at a higher level, because you see some of these high-level events, and there's, like, thousands of people watching at once, and that would just turn that into a fucking clusterfuck. And then the crowd favorite would come out on top more often than not, because obviously...
Mango.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to get someone who's, you know, cheering for one guy, and his fan group are going to be like, oh, you know what, we should totally give him all these bonuses and shit. And so they're going to pile these buffs onto him, and he's going to be, you know, OP as all shit, and just going to walk all over the competition. You'd be like, oh, well, that was kind of lame. Although if it was like an exhibition kind of match where there's nothing in it, but, you know, just dudes playing for fun, I could totally see that being a thing.
You'd still be pissed, though. You'd still be pissed if you're like, man, you only won because you got the bullshit. Like, it's like in Smash, like, somebody only wins because they get the item back when people played with items. Or Mario, yeah. You know, you got... I was in the lead for, like, 3 hours, but then you got the blue shell, and then you got triple reds. Fuck you.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
exactly. Obviously, with serious competitive gaming, there should always be a barrier between spectator and player. Like, spectators should have... Their influence on the match should occur only through, I guess, what they can do with their voice. And I'm trying to, like, phrase this very carefully, right? Because obviously spectators do have an effect on the match just by virtue of cheering loud. But I think that barrier to how much a spectator can actually affect the match at the end of the day is extremely important. So I think that's kind of a very dangerous road to go down, simply because of the effect that I think it, because honestly, I think the way Twitch chat is, I think Twitch chat would love it. I think Twitch chat would be all, it would be insanely successful, but at the end of the day, it's just not something we want.
Yeah, well, like you've mentioned in the past, how, you know, once you get over, like, I don't know, 10,000 viewers, Twitch chat is just a monster that cannot be controlled, and you don't want to, like, even look at it or acknowledge its existence. But another, like, just thought I had is, like, a lot of these general, like, things about, like, new media in general is that people keep sort of retrofitting it, right? Like, all the time people are using stuff like Twitch and OBS and all these different programs to sort of emulate TV rather than taking advantage of the interesting aspects. And one thing, which is, like, just a little plugin I have on this channel, or at least on my stream, is that, like, when people drop an email, it, like, flies around the screen. How cool would that be if, like, during a league game, like, you could see, like, the league match happening in a stadium, and you could see people's emotes flying around like confetti in the air, kind of stuff like that.
That'd be so nuts.
You'd see all these just pog champs. If something cool happens, something bad happens, like, Bible thumps just fill the sky, you know, like, there's ideas, like, I want some stuff.
That'd be super sick, actually.
I don't know. I don't know. That was a pretty good little tangent there. Dale, are you still there, friend, or did you go and puke?
No, I'm here.
Okay, just don't have too much to say about that.
Yeah, not a lot, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, if I could add one more thing, I do. You mentioned how a lot of streamers and broadcasters are using Twitch and platforms like it as just kind of an extension of TV. But that's kind of why I like what Twitch is doing to kind of push the boundaries of what they are, because it gives broadcasters more ideas on how they can take more advantage of the platform that they have. Like, even though some ideas work really well and some don't, still putting those ideas out there into space definitely does a lot to help broadcasters kind of think outside the box of what really is possible using this platform, because it really is an unexplored market at this point, right?
Yeah. It's like we're in the 1400s and we're just finding this new continent, basically, as far as the world of broadcasting goes.
Yeah, but let's be real here, though. whoever pitched the idea of social eating as a channel really needs to reevaluate their lives.
So it's like, what I find...
Social eating was definitely a thing before Twitch introduced it. Like, that was a thing, like, in Korea they were doing that shit. And people were,
yeah,
like,
it's called mukbang.
Money. Yeah.
It shouldn't be a thing, though, is what I'm saying.
Hey, so, if it makes money, then it should be a thing. That's called capitalism.
Yeah, that's capitalism right there. If it makes so money, people are going to do it. I was about to say mukbang again. Social eating was really clearly Twitch's way of sort of slowly edging towards IRL, because now IRL is a big part of Twitch. But when they announced it, it was like, what the fuck, you know, like, you don't even have to play video games. But since then, like, we've had people doing, like, IRL streams on their phones and traveling the world. You know, there was a, what was his name, Ice Poseidon, who, you know, basically streamed his entire life and then fucking got banned off Twitch because he shut down a plane. God damn it.
What?
Did you hear about that? Oh,
no?
My God. Kyle, did you hear about this?
No, I did not.
Oh, my God.
All right, so this dude, Ice Poseidon, streamed IRL all the time. Like, he would stream him walking around town. He had thousands of viewers. And all the time, people would, like, if he was in a restaurant, people would prank call the restaurant, stuff like that. Like, all the time, his viewers would be causing mayhem in the world around him. Like, his life was a show. He went to get on a plane, and he revealed too much about what plane he was on and what airport he was at.
I see where this is going.
And the Twitch chat called in a bomb threat.
Oh, no.
So they had to shut the plane down, get everyone off. They found out what happened, and he got kicked off, and he got banned permanently off Twitch.
Yeah, fuck Twitch chat, dude. That, I mean, also, like, he's an idiot. He's an idiot for, like, sharing too much information about his flight, but, like, actually, fuck Twitch chat. That's something.
Yeah, dude, it's so bad.
Who does that? Why would you do that?
It reminds me that I saw a trailer for a movie, and I can't remember the name of the movie, but the whole point of the film was you could download this app on your phone, and now this app actually does exist under a different name or whatever, but you can download this app on your phone, and you can register yourself as someone who does dares or like gives them out. And so people would pay you money to go and do a dare of some description. So they could send you a dare saying, hey, go smash a window or something on a random car. And so you go and do it and you stream yourself like smashing this window and you get paid money to do it. And then it escalates and keeps going up and up and up. And basically you can keep saying yes and doing all these dares and earning all this money. Or you can turn around and say no. And then I think you lose everything you've earned or whatever. And the movie, as a movie concept, I think it was pretty cool. I didn't see the film, and I can't remember the name of it, but it sounds like a really cool idea. However, then you run into that sort of situation where you give away slightly too much information and cause all kinds of chaos because of exactly what you just said. Like, someone's going to go, oh, you know what would be funny is if we call in a bomb threat to where they are, and this will really fuck their day right up. It's like, no. Because that's going down the same line as people getting swatted when that was a thing.
Yeah.
You know? And the crazy thing is, this app, I saw an advert for this app while I was on Facebook or something. I can't remember. But I saw an advert for the app saying how you could you could get money to do people's dares. So all you had to do was like video yourself doing said dare and you could earn the money for it.
I actually heard that there's, like, a movie coming out soon where there's, like, a teen girl who keeps, like, basically tormenting these, like, old men because of the things these people are saying online, and eventually ends up, like, murdering them and stuff like that. Like, it's some horror movie, and it's built around, like, cyber culture, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not persuading, but, like, you know, goading her into doing this, these things. And how, like, she loses herself in that. And it's super weird to hear about these sort of things. Sort of start to manifest in reality a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I'm all for, you know, that IRL stream thing where you could be doing something really mundane and then someone from Twitch chat just sort of really fucks your day up by, you know, as you say, like, prank calling a restaurant or something and just seeing that mayhem unfold a little bit. to an extent, I think that's a really cool thing to see. But then there's going too far by calling in a bomb threat and shutting down a plane. But yeah. You've got that thing where, you know, there's always going to be that one arsehole who ruins it for everyone.
It's like
there's a bit of a give and take there, right? Where it's like human nature is just going to mean that once there's a certain amount of viewers, like things just are going to get shitty naturally, right? And as a broadcaster, it can be really easy to have all these fans, all these people in your Twitch chat and feel comfortable kind of having this certain level of intimacy with them, which of course makes for a really good stream, but there's a bit of give and take there where as soon as you give them a little bit too much, just the nature of the environment just means something bad is going to happen. So I think there's a bit of onus, obviously, on the streamers to just kind of check themselves and be aware kind of what they're sharing at all times, given the size of their audience. But on the same token, education of idiots out there, like, hey, if you are watching this right now, don't be a dick. That's pretty easy, right?
It should be. Like, it's not very hard to not be a dick, but I sure see a lot of dicks out there. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. But it's very easy to say, don't be a dick, but you know someone's going to do it. It's just the nature of it.
It's like, I actually worked on setting this rig up, and I tested it a little bit a couple weeks ago, where I basically got a lavalier microphone, a charger that can go into my laptop bag, and sort of like a mini tripod thingy that I can set up, so I can basically stream IRL and like have a full camera phone, sort of like a selfie stick kind of thing going on. And I've wanted to try that, like go to an event and just start like walking around streaming stuff, but you know, because it's super neat to be able to involve people in what you're doing. That's why people love to videograph, and that's why it naturally lended itself towards like Twitch streaming. But it sort of blurs the lines between like, what if somebody like, when it's live, people don't really get a say in what they want on and off camera. Like, if somebody says something that, they're like, no, don't put that in a video. All right, you know, whatever. Like, I can edit that out. But with live, like, you don't get that option, and that's, like, unfiltered reality. Brings in a lot of stuff with, like, consent and, you know, what's cool to record and not.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, no, I completely see that. Thinking about it, I just remembered, you know, when, like, strangely how it's been a year since Pokemon Go came out, and, you know, it was pretty huge when it landed. Yeah. Kind of died out a lot now because they fucked up. But, like, right at the start, you had people who were streaming themselves playing Pokemon Go as they're walking around, and people getting fucking mugged live on stream.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you gotta... There's a little bit of awareness there, you know. There's doing something and bringing entertainment, and then there's always that one, like I said, there's that one asshole who will come along and ruin it for everyone. And
did you guys hear about that? The dude who, like, literally, he was walking around playing Pokemon Go. He had this camera set up hanging off of him, and he was playing with his phone. And this dude just jumps and takes his phone, beats him up, and then he's lying on the ground. And this is all on stream. Holy shit.
Yeah,
I think there are a few cases of that in the UK. I think it was at one point fairly, well, I wouldn't say regular. I don't think it was happening to everyone, but it happened quite a few times.
It's not good. It's not good.
Nah, it's fucked up.
Yeah, and with how often like Facebook live streams are building up, and not even only in addition to Twitch. Like, I feel like in general, culture started going to that point where, you know, everything is going to be, like, considered live culture, like, live video. Like, I was put in a really weird situation, actually, last Wednesday. So, the other week, my grandmother actually passed, which is very sad, very sad. But, my grandfather then asked me to stream the funeral. So, it was kind of a weird situation for me. So, I actually, like, set up camera, microphone, I streamed the funeral, and then the reception. I like them showing off the video, the people speaking, but like it's an emotional event, and I was like, I don't know if like, you know, people want to be like live on the internet during this, you know, people crying and shit.
Yeah,
but like I at the same that, time, man. Everyone wants to, like, people who can't show up want to be able to be there in spirit. Yeah, yeah.
It's like a couple of my friends, they got married and they did the whole like streamed the wedding thing so that people that weren't able to attend were still able to, you know, be there in spirit kind of thing. And I can understand it. But I think for such a sort of event like that, I personally wouldn't do it. But I can understand the sort of appeal to it.
Yeah. I know there's been streamers who have streamed their wedding, like on Twitch, and that's decently popular.
Imagine like having a big stream where you streamed your wedding. Like imagine Twitch chat at a wedding.
Imagine like the production value of top 8 at a major, but for your wedding, like a slow motion replay of the vows or something.
And yeah, no, I'm not inviting Twitch chat to my wedding. I have enemies that I have had my entire life that I would invite to my wedding before I invite Twitch chat to my wedding.
Sorry, Muzz. Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see, especially. Like, I'm hoping to be able to do some more IRL stream stuff at, like, events, especially with how I'd be walking around, like, trying to, like, you know, chat with people and get interviews and stuff like that, and it'd be neat to do that with, like, a live format. Because I feel like that's sort of a section of news that hasn't really been done as much. Like, I know, Spud, you did that for, what was that? Not Comic-Con. Something else with Facebook, right?
Yeah, I did Facebook Live for the London London Character Parade as part of the London Games Festival. Basically, there was a character parade, bunch of cosplayers and stuff walking through the center of London, going from one location to another, hitting a couple of photo ops on the way there, and then stopping for a little bit of a show just outside the, like, one of the main event halls. And yeah, I Facebook lived the stroll to and from.
Yeah, and did you get any things like people being uncomfortable with you, like, walk around shoving cameras, or because I didn't actually like watch that full stream. I saw a couple highlights of when you were like talking with chaps and stuff, but
No, I think I got quite lucky in the sense that the people I talked to were okay with being filmed. I did get a couple of shitty looks from the staff running the event, because apparently me slowing everyone down to talk to a couple of people was really really pissing them off. That's funny. Yeah, I mean, I didn't give a shit because I don't know those guys and they're never going to see me again. But yeah, it was kind of annoying in that regard.
Gotcha.
Yeah, something I wanted to make sure to bring up, as long as we're talking about E3 on this episode of the podcast, Dragon Ball Z Fighters. Holy shit!
Yeah, like
actually.
So it's funny too, because I grew up playing like the Budokai games with my brothers, because we were all really big Dragon Ball fans. So we bought like all the Dragon Ball games, but they're not like real fighters, you know what I mean? And now. I think it's so crazy that the developers of is it Guilty Gear or is it
Yeah, the Guilty Gear and BlazBlue developers
are actually making a Dragon Ball fighting game. I just love how finally not even just FGC but like Smash culture is starting to spread out a bit more, cuz like, you know, there was always that situation where like Melee players or Smash 4 players or just Smash in general culture stuck with only Smash, but now Smash players are really supporting, like, ARMS, Splatoon a little bit, and now a bunch of Smash players are hyped for Dragon Ball. It's good to see. It's good to see people sort of stretch out of their comfort zone a bit more and support other games, and I hope trends like that continue.
I mean, it's easy to get out of your comfort zone when the game is Dragon Ball, right,
though? Right, easy, exactly. Free. Like, I can be Gohan and pull the one-handed Kamehameha and sell in tourney? Bruh.
No, I'm still more super hyped for Splatoon 2, but I think that's just because I'm not a Dragon Ball fan.
Ah, you didn't watch it as a kid?
Nope.
That's fair.
After spending an entire weekend surrounded by Splatoon, I helped run Splatoon 2 at Smash and Splash 3. a few weekends ago, and after spending the entire weekend around that game, I cannot wait for Splatoon 2. Like, honestly, Splatoon is my second favorite esport at that point. The game is so good.
It actually is. Like, I've played a lot of Splatoon 1, nothing like overly serious, but I know I'm gonna download that ASAP. It's gonna go live at like 9 p.m. the day before. I'm gonna be downloading it and playing that shit. Let's fucking go. Spud, you down to make the official Nerdable Splatoon team and get bodied by everyone in the world because we're not good at
fuck
video games?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Let's fucking do it.
I'm just hoping we get, you know, matching outfits.
Ooh.
We gotta get hats or jackets or something going on. I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking, you know, you get those like squid ear hat thingies.
Oh,
that,
no.
You know, the ears come all the way down, that they make gloves. I'm thinking we get those, but in Nerdable pink.
That'd be cute.
What about Nerdable nipple clamps?
Nipple clamps, I could get behind that. Like, you clamp the Splatoon hat to your nipples as well, so it's like a glove, but it's also a nipple clamp.
Oh, I was thinking you were gonna, like, clamp the Joy-Cons.
I mean...
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, then you bring your setup with you. You just, like, plug them into the Switch. All right, let's go. Ooh, another...
Yeah, how's that for motion controls?
Oh, no. But yeah, no, if you're getting your Switch, dude, I want to play Splatoon 2 with you. That sounds fun. That sounds fun. I'm so down. I got to play the test fires for that. I wasn't able to slide into ARMS, but I was able to play the Splatoon 2 ones. And I walked away from it going, yeah, this is in fact Splatoon. This is basically the same game, but now it's on the Switch and not on a dead console, so it's better for that reason alone.
Yeah, absolutely. I played quite a bit of ARMS online, purely, like I said, that's where the game is. You go online, it's easier for you to earn tokens and shit so that you can buy new ARMS, so that you can use your favorite character with one of your favorite weapons kind of thing. And I'm completely blown away by how populated the servers are. You'll pop into one. It is launch weekend, but it's great to be able to just find a game almost instantly. It's really good, and I can't wait to be able to do that with Splatoon, because I never got to play the first one, and it looks fun as fuck. Like, I just cannot wait to play that and run around as a little squid man or squid girl, depending on who I decide to play at the time, and run around, you know, start coating stuff in pink colors.
What I love about Splatoon is not even just, like, there's so many aspects of it that are sick, but, like, not even just the fact that, you know, you win by covering turf or you win through the different game modes, but just how intricately tied together the two mechanics of the game are, like the swimming and the shooting. Like, when you think about a game with shooting, you gotta reload. And so in that, the fact that you reload by moving consistently and perpetually drives you forward, and it gives the game, the entire game, this sense of momentum that you carry with you. And it's something that no other game's really done. And that's something Nintendo does a really good job about, is just changing things at a fundamental level. Like, if we were talking about, like, you know, streaming and how it's different on a fundamental level than TV, but it's not really utilized in that way. Nintendo does that same thing with, like, the different games it develops. Like, it decided, we're gonna make a more traditional fighting game, and then they decided to make ARMS instead, or Pokken. It's like, those aren't traditional fighting games, Nintendo. Those are quite a bit different, actually, but, like, I can't really argue with you. Nintendo says, we're going to make a third-person shooter, and they make Splatoon, and create something absolutely genius. I don't know how they do it.
I also like the idea of the sort of dynamic shifting paradigm of Splatoon, because as you say, you move through the ink to reload. That's how you get your ammo back. And so it stands to reason that the most contested point and where all the action is going to be where, like, the greatest concentration of ink is. And so you're going to be constantly sort of making your way back to that area in order to keep adding to the fight, which is going to be awesome. And then you've also got the whole, every shot you fire also inks the ground, so it gives you that a little bit more terrain. And, you know, I think they're onto a real winner with Splatoon. Like, everything about it just works in my head. I haven't played it yet, so I could be completely wrong, but from what everyone said, It's like, yeah, Splatoon 2 is literally perfect.
Well, especially after seeing as much of it as I've seen now, I really think the biggest issue that Splatoon had really was that it was on the Wii U. I think if Nintendo had a more popular console for Splatoon to come out on, I think we would see a completely different landscape for it right now. So that's honestly the biggest reason I'm excited for Splatoon 2, because now that there's all these people with Switches in their hands, let's see kind of what the competitive landscape looks like now that more people overall own the game. Because you think right now of all the people that own Splatoon, the fact that just because of the fact that not many people bought Wii U's at the end of the day compared to a lot of other consoles out there, Splatoon 1 at least still showed out a pretty decent sized competitive community given the overall number of people that bought the game. So now that, you know, everyone and their cousin wants to buy a Switch, let's see where Splatoon kind of looks, I want to say, like, you know, 4 or 5 months from now, and what kind of turnouts we're seeing for events at that point now that people actually own the console that the game came out for.
Yeah, like Splatoon actually, I'm trying to find numbers, but it sold actually really well. It sold like in launch week in the US, like 1.5 million, which is like actually really big, especially for a console that had such a low install base as the Wii U. So a greater install base and a greater like mass culture appeal. Super interesting to see like where it can go, especially with how, like you mentioned earlier, Nintendo sort of building it top down instead, like how even their Switch trailer showed Splatoon on like an Evo stage. You know, it's like they're not giving us that stage, but they're saying this is what can happen. And like Nintendo Versus, they're definitely gearing the community towards aiming at that.
Exactly. And I think you brought it up a little bit how, you know, you ask for a third-person shooter and Nintendo gives you Splatoon. You ask for a fighting game, they give you ARMS. You ask for esports and, you know, so now we're kind of seeing what happens when you ask Nintendo for esports. And, you know, you can kind of tell that they've been sitting on this idea for a little bit now, because that's kind of Nintendo's MO, if you will. They won't rush out any ideas. So I think if they're finally ready to push forward with their own little Nintendoized version of esports, that vision that they have, whatever it might be, because at this point we've seen very little of what this vision really is. So I think we can just infer, given the style that Nintendo's tackled everything else they've gone after, what their game plan is here for esports. So I think it's super exciting and I can't wait to see where it's going.
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. Like, I'm all on the same page there. Again, like, have you heard the interview where Reggie responded to what HBox said at Smash and Splash?
I actually just saw that the other day.
Yeah, I thought that was super interesting. How Reggie was sort of saying that, like, he likes that the community is like so passionate. Like, for context, but after this big tournament, this major, a couple weeks back, Smash and Splash, one of like the top five players in the world took it all and then went on a rant, basically told Nintendo off, like, you know, acknowledge us, like, you know, why aren't you getting in on this? And was basically dissing Reggie directly. And a member of Kotaku, I think it was, actually showed Reggie that video just straight up at E3. And Reggie was just watching it, smiling, and went, man, I love passionate Smash players. Like, this dude's hating on me, but I love it.
Yeah, I think, I actually think I remember you saying something about this earlier, like in a previous sort of chat we had.
Yeah. 'Cause
I'm sure someone's mentioned that to me before.
Yeah.
And I think that's great, because then also that guy is now fucking eating his hat where Nintendo have turned around and started talking about, you know, Nintendo Versus.
Yeah. But Nintendo Versus actually has only, like, they haven't really been promoting a lot of original Smash content. They've been promoting ARMS and Pokken and Splatoon content, but they're still kind of staying away from their own original Smash content, which is still interesting. And that's kind of what Hungrybox is talking about, where Nintendo won't really, at the end of the day, they're not really going all in behind competitive Smash. And, you know, who's to say what their reasoning is behind it? And in regards to Reggie's reaction, my take on it is, what's Reggie supposed to say? I think he gave the PR response, right? He gave the response that's supposed to, air quotes, shut up, Hungrybox. But at the end of the day, you're Reggie. How are you going to respond to that? Like, other than the way he did, like, he responded how he had to. But at the end of the day, actions speak louder than words, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I think is the reason Nintendo haven't gotten involved in it in a big way is because how can they? I get the impression that if Nintendo decided to get in on it now, it's probably just going to change how everything works as it is at the moment, and then everyone's just going to be up.
How can that? I'll give you one really easy answer, and this is the only answer you need to know for how can blank do esports? Money. That's it, money.
Yeah, but my point is, you know, they're going to get involved, and then it's going to fundamentally change how everything operates. Like, there's no two ways around that. As soon as they weigh in on something, it's going to be like, oh, okay, now these guys are here, they're going to want to do it their way. And even if they turn around and be like, no, you guys are doing a great job, we're just going to give you the money, it's only a matter of time before they turn around and be like, right, we're not happy with the way you guys are doing this, because now their name is associated with it. It has to go well, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Especially for a company that is so laser surgery, completely like obsessed with branding, right? With Nintendo, you have to be, because Nintendo is nothing without their brand, without their perfectly, completely clean brand. Like, they obviously, they're going to be very controlling once they get in. So it's
really exactly tricky. So the reason they haven't touched it is because, in my opinion, from what I can tell, the reason they haven't gotten involved in a big way is because if they do, it's going to fundamentally change how everything operates. And I get the feeling that the Smash community, being as passionate as they are and as involved in it as they are, obviously, they're not going to be happy with any changes that they may or may not want to make, because that's just the nature of how gamers are. We resist change. We're all talking about, oh man, we really need some change and innovation. And then it comes along and we're like, man, that's fucking retarded. Put that away. Should have kept it how it was. And then we complain that everything's
sequels. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we complain that, oh man, it's too like the previous games. We need something new, something fresh. And then they come along and they revitalize it and they put something new out there again. And we're turning around and being like, oh man, but it's not like the originals. It's like the original original Battlefront games. All right, they were fucking great. Then EA released Battlefront, and it's a fucking shitstorm. And like, oh, we took a new approach to some things and then kept some other stuff the same, and it didn't work. Admittedly, I think Battlefront was just a bad game. But you know what I'm saying? Like, and then they show off all this footage of Battlefront 2 at E3, and it looks like the original Battlefront 2, just, you know, fancier and shinier. And it's like, you know what? If you'd have released that, if you'd have released that the first time through, you wouldn't have had any of this problem. But then everyone would have turned around and been like, oh, well, it's just the first game again. You know,
I mean, I would complain if they literally just like released Battlefront 2 HD with like a few new mechanics for the new rebooted Battlefront that came out. What was that, a year or was that 2 years ago?
I think it was two.
Yeah, whatever it was, like, honestly, I wouldn't have complained.
Oh, no, absolutely not. But
and, I mean, that's what you're saying now. Like, yeah, now they are releasing it, and it seems to be working. Reaction seems to be pretty good, so.
Yeah, the reaction to Battlefront 2 is much better because, again, like, the things that people were shitting on, like, Battlefront for weren't necessarily the fact that, it didn't have, like, that it was super different from the old games, like, the fact that it was FPS now and had more, like, FPS mechanics, but the fact that, you know, like, the heroes were just random drops on the map. There weren't space battles. You know, there weren't very many maps. It was really expensive. You had season pass. You know, it was another example of just a publisher gorging the consumer. You know, Battlefront 2, the reason people are reacting more positively now is because they're saying, okay, look, the way you get a hero is by earning it with points that you get from playing. Same thing with vehicles. There are space battles. No DLC. No expensive DLC. The season pass is free. And people are like, thank you, that's all we actually wanted. Not just the same game over and over again, but we just wanted, like, you to not be assholes about making the game. You know? Because, like, that's too popular of a business strategy now to have a $60 game and a $60 season pass, and that's what I heard so many people protesting about. Again, the changes were so drastic, and with so many of those bad decisions lopped on with the fact that the game sort of was fundamentally different, sort of led to that backlash 2 years ago. 2 actually looks pretty good. Battlefront 2 actually looks, like, pretty fun. I'd play it if I cared, but...
I mean, I'm probably going to pick it up, because I absolutely loved Battlefront 2 when it was on, like, PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be picking that up anyway, because it looks great. I completely agree with everything you've just said.
Yeah. Thank you. You make me seem smart.
Yeah.
I think we went over it, like, a lot, actually. Anyone really have any other closing remarks? Or things that we haven't made touch on? What was that? What was that, Kyle?
I'm all good.
Nice. Spud?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of feel bad because Dale hasn't really said much this time through. I mean, I get that he's hungover and he's probably sat there like, oh, man.
Hearing about Nintendo stuff that he doesn't give a fuck about, but that's fine.
Nah.
Next week, I promise to be twice as awake and alive.
It's okay, Dale. We love you, dude.
Dale, buddy, do you need a hug?
Spud only lives like 3 hours away. He can walk. He can head over there. He can give you a hug.
What? Dale lives in London, man. I could be there in like 40 minutes.
Oh shit! Go give that man a hug. He deserves it.
Go give that man a hug.
With that, I think I'm going to play us out with a bit of music. Thanks everyone though for joining us and listening to the Notable Podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I'll catch people on the flip side. Hadooses.
See ya.
Bye.